Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio here on University Matters, Dr. Saverio Tomaiuolo, who is here at the University of Malta at the invitation of the Faculty of Arts, in particular by Professor Gloria Lauri-Lucente as co-convener with Professor Ivan Kallous of the Literature and Comparison Research Seminar Series. And in fact, Dr. Tomaiuolo has given two lectures, one to the Literature and Comparison in the Literature and Comparison series, entitled Something Rich and Strange, Eduardo De Filippo Translating the Tempest, and another to students, entitled I Am Montalbano, Montalbano Sono, Fluency e Differenze nelle Traduzioni di Andrea Camilleri. Just a short word about my guest. Dr. Tomaiuolo teaches English literature and language at the Cassino University, Italy. He has published a monograph on Alfred Tennyson's narrative poems and a book on translation theory, as well as articles and essays on postmodernism and Victorian literature. He has recently published a study on Mary Elizabeth Braddon entitled In Lady Audley's Shadow, Mary Elizabeth Braddon and Victorian Literary Genre. The forthcoming Cambridge Companion to Sensation Fiction will include his contribution on the sensation novel and the Indian Mutiny. The sensation novel, for those listeners who might not be familiar with the phrase, refers to a subgenre of novel writing which commenced in the 1860s and is best illustrated in some of the work of Wilkie Collins. Dr. Tomaiuolo is currently working on a new project, provisionally entitled The Imperfect Page, Victorian Unfinished Novels. A very warm welcome to University Matters.
Thank you.
The subject of your talks clearly has been translation, both from English into Italian, in the case of the De Filippo, and from Italian into English, in the case of Andrea Camilleri's novels. Perhaps you could sort of get us into the subject by talking about some of the problematics of translating.
Translation is not simply a rewording of a message from one language to another, but it is strictly connected to all a cultural universe revolving around a specific language. So it's not just putting, you know, some liquids from one glass into another, but it's something far more complex. And this thing complicates when we deal with specifically complex texts, such as, for instance, Eduardo De Filippo choosing to translate a canonical writer with a canonical drama just like The Tempest into 17th century Napolitan. So not simply moving from English into Italian, but from English into a specific cultural bound and regional dialect. And the same problem is raised in reverse as far as Camilleri is concerned, because Camilleri's translator, Steven Sartorelli, who is an American poet, had the challenging task to translate from the Camilleri's language into America. So a very complex, you know, translating task to achieve, and a very challenging experience for him. So there's a sort of double problem in this sense, moving from Camillorese into Italian, and then from Italian into English.
In fact, it sounds almost sort of diabolical, really, the problems involved, because as ever with language, we're not talking about a tool here, but we're talking about something that comes with cultural baggage, with meanings that are full of layers and all the difficulties that come from that reality. Referring just particularly to Camilleri now, because unfortunately because of the time constraints that we have, Camilleri here is, the problems with Camilleri really are the looking at how to put across the cultural idea, the mindset that Camilleri has written the book in, because he's coming to his books with an agenda.
Camilleri deliberately decided not to use only Sicilian dialect. We can call his language a sort of genetically modified Sicilian, because he works both with Sicilian dialect. He hybridizes this language with Italian, and then includes, ironically, some expressions from the bureaucratic world. And literary references as well. So it's a multi-layered language, basically hybridized language. So the translator, when confronted with such a complex, multitask, has to use all his resources in order to achieve a good result. And Camilleri uses a dialect which has behind it a long history. A very complex history. So he's deeply rooted in Sicilian culture, and he translates in his own language all the complexities, not only linguistic but ideological and cultural bound complexities of Sicily. So it's a sort of complex mixing of different ideas of the world which he conveys through his own language.
And in fact, that's very much it, isn't it? That he loves his country, because his area, his paese, in particular, in his case, Agrigento. He almost always worked in Rome, but loves home and goes back there and wants to present Sicily to a wide audience. And he does that also within that context in different ways, because he has what I heard you refer to as this Agrigentino raffinato, and also the dialect, different type of language used by other characters according to their social status, to their work, to where they're coming from. So he's actually changing the language according to the person who's talking, who's speaking.
Absolutely right, because he changes the linguistic register of the characters according to the context of the speaking process. So when Montalbano, for instance, is talking to his superiors, he imitates the language of Italian bureaucracy, so with very funny results. But when he talks with, people from lower social classes, then he uses more Sicilian terms and Sicilian sentences. While, on the other hand, when he uses normalist language, he, Montalbano, and Camilleri, of course, behind him, uses this genetically modified mixture of language. And we must also include all the variations to the standard, if we can call it standard, language of Camilleri when dealing with characters just like Adelina, who is the maid servant, or Catarella, the switchboard operator, which are, cases apart in a way.
It is amazing how he manages to get away with this Sicilian dialect, which he has really manufactured to be palatable to an ordinary Italian audience, who, if he were to write in the real Sicilian McCoy, would he would alienate. But he's making it a bit difficult for them. You have said that in 20 pages you get used to it, and that sort of more or less was my experience. And you feel, you feel quite a satisfaction, in fact, when you actually catch on and start hearing the words that are repeated, obviously, and then become familiar. But when it comes to Sartarelli's translation of that, what were the tools that he used then? Perhaps you can explain how Sartorelli decided to deal with that situation when translating into English.
Yes, Camilleri is difficult to understand for an Italian person normally. So he has, as you mentioned, after you move after 20 pages, then you start, you know, mixing with Camilleri and becoming, in a way, one of his friends. As for Sartorelli, his task was a difficult one. Sartorelli is also a poet, so probably, I'm sure of that, he has the right instruments to deal with the challenging language of Camilleri. And then he adopted specific strategies in order to approach Camilleri's text. Of course, it was impossible for him to render exactly all the nuances and the allusions of Camilleri's language. So he chose to use the Brooklynese accent, basically. Then he also includes some Sicilian words. And at the end of the books, he includes extensive notes on specific topics that are alluded to in Camilleri's books. For instance, I remember Camilleri was mentioning mani pulite, which is something every Italian person is aware of, but we cannot imagine an English-speaking person who knows what mani pulite is. So Sartorelli decides, in an intelligent way, to include extensive note explaining at the end of his translation these Italian historical events or specific political figures, for instance. So he tries to, you know, to challenge and to accept the challenge. He doesn't always succeed, but it is impossible to succeed because, in my opinion, there isn't a perfect translation. Translation is always a process, a moving process, and translations are usually connected also to the time, to the historical time in which they were created. So they change with time, and it is a sort of never-ending process through time and space, which is, for me, the imperfection of translation is the real success of translation, because it's not mathematics, it's just dealing with literature, and so it's far more complex.
I personally found the translations, Sartorelli's translations, to be excellent. I enjoy, obviously, reading Camilleri in the original. I'm privileged to be able to do that. But I also enjoy reading the English versions, because I feel that the way he has rendered the different registers is incredibly successful, actually. That use of street English, really, compared to other sort of higher registers, I found it very successful. And some of the books I've read in both languages, like August Heat, for example. I remember reading it first in English and then in Italian, and really enjoying them both. So I think, for me anyway, it worked. And I mean, obviously he's very well thought of, so I'm not saying anything new about that. Do you personally feel that Sartorelli has been a successful translator?
Well, I think he is a very good translator and an expert translator. And the moments in which I think Sartorelli succeeds is when he is free to experiment with language more. And so when he isn't conditioned by the restraints of communicating to an English-speaking audience everything, so he has sometimes to normalize Camilleri's idiosyncratic language. But when, for instance, he translates Cattarella's, surreal dialogues, or Adelina's, you know, sentences, then I think that he succeeds, because he renders what I call a sort of carnivalesque idea of language. Language is something that transgresses norms, linguistic norms, just like, you know, Cattarella transgresses surnames, he always alters them. And, you know, when I'm talking about carnival, this carnival attitude, I'm not original, I'm quoting from Mikhail Bakhtin, who was a Russian theorist. But in a way, he said that the carnival is the rule of transgression, is the rule of carnival. Anyway, in a way, when Sartorelli chooses to transgress the rules he has imposed upon himself sometimes, then he totally succeeds. The paradox is that Cattarella dialogues are usually comic dialogues. They are involuntarily comic dialogues. And basically and paradoxically, the most difficult things to translate are comic dialogues into another language. But Sartorelli is very intelligent and sharp, because he changes things but obtains the same results for the audience. And that's the greatest thing a translator can do.
Absolutely. And in English, the malapropism, the changing one word for another, in that sense, is a classic humour genre within English. So, and that's what Cattarella does all the time. So I think it works very well in English. I don't know whether, because I'm afraid I don't know French, I don't have good French, I don't know whether in the French translation, which I know that you think was very good, whether it works quite the same way.
Yes, because there are two French translators. One working, Dominique Vitoz, working basically with the non-Montalbano novels, while Serge Quadrupani works with Montalbano novels. And both of them use specifically cultural-bound dialects. Dominique Vitoz uses the language, the dialect from Lyon, while Serge Quadrupani chooses the dialect from the south of France, which in a way for him is full of bygone memories, just like Camilleri's use of language is full for him of bygone memories of his Agrigentino past with his family, because the language, the Sicilian used by Camilleri, basically is the language that was spoken by his family in Agrigento. So in a way Quadrupani mimics these memories of the past in his own language. He is very creative, and that's why I think it is a very successful translation.
Going back to the reasons why Camilleri writes in this particular way, this idea of the opaque, I know you mentioned in one of your lectures, this clear desire on the part of Camilleri to be opaque, really. He seems to want to make it difficult, as we said before. He wants to get the reader to make a bit more of an effort than he or she would normally have to make. But particularly in the Sicilian context, this idea of opacity. Am I reading too much into this, or do you think that he's purposely trying to put across this idea that Sicilian society is opaque?
You are perfectly correct. Sicilian culture and society has the principle of opacity as a sort of guiding line in their own way of dealing with things, of arrabugliare things, which means to entangle things. And both from from a cultural point of view, but also from a linguistic point of view. If you ask for an information to a Sicilian person, it would take, 20 minutes just to know if a shop is just on the right-hand corner or not. And Camilleri's greatest teacher, literary teacher and father figure in this sense, was Leonardo Sciascia, who taught Camilleri the value of opacity in narrating stories who have a framework who have the same framework of a detective story, but that aren't properly detective stories. If we remember A Ciascuno il Suo, it is a detective story in which the detection is opaque. And Camilleri learns from him this lesson and translates literally in his own opaque language this opacity of Sicilian society and culture. And he talks about the mezze misse, the half masses. So you don't know the truth exactly, but you know only half of the truth. And you must, be assured that this is the only truth that you can get.
He's not trying to, or even attempting to clarify in that sense, really. He's wanting you, the reader, to enjoy the opacity, really, I think. Detective stories as a genre have sometimes sort of have not been on the top shelf as far as genre concerned. You know, detective stories haven't been considered perhaps as high literature. But certainly Camilleri's type of detective novel, even though he's written many, I don't know how many the Montalbano books are to date, but many of them. But at the same time, he is a very literary writer. And there's obviously his books can be read at various levels. You did mention in one of your lectures the reference to other writers from within his own books. How deep is Camilleri in that sense?
Well, this is far more evident in the non-Montalbano series. In other books, historical books or fantasy books, just like Redi Girgenti, Camilleri shows all of his literary background. While in Montalbano, I think he includes sometimes, in a very subdued way, this literary, very refined literary references from writers ranging from William Faulkner in L'odore della notte, The Smell of the Night, a short story by William Faulkner, to postmodern writers, semiotics in one of the first Montalbano novels, and even in the last novel, Lo Sguardo di Angelica, which has been just published, so isn't translated yet, there's a prolonged reference to L'Orlando Furioso, because Angelica is the main character of the novel, and she's read in light of Orlando Furioso. But Camilleri manages to do that without any literary pretension. So he wants to speak with his readers on multiple levels. So if you are a common reader who just wants to have fun, you can read on one level Montalbano stories. Then if you are a highbrow reader, then you can approach him as he really is, as a far more complex character. In a way, Camilleri reminds me of Charles Dickens, a great popular writer, selling thousands of copies at the time, who can be, enjoyed by every typology of readers, from, lowbrow readers, highbrow literary critics, and everybody. And that's the great gift who Camilleri has as a writer.
There are certain aspects of his books which are very particularly Sicilian, obviously. But there are other relationships that really are universal relationships. And I don't think I would like to have a chat about Camilleri without Salvo Montalbano without mentioning Livia. I think it would be very unfair to miss her out of the conversation. Where does she fit in, really?
We don't want to be unfair with her, because usually Montalbano is unfair with her. Yes, Livia is a sort of stranger, totally stranger, and in a way she is a sort of alien coming into another planet, which is Sicily. Camilleri has chosen to use a standard Italian for Livia because he didn't want to mix up dialects too much, because as everybody knows, she comes from Genoa, but she comes from a totally different world. So sometimes she's a sort of a foreigner who doesn't understand the language, which means the culture, spoken by Montalbano, by his friends, and by the place in which he lives. And basically, there's not only a problem of sentimental relationship between Montalbano and Livia, but probably we could provocatively say that there is a sort of linguistic problem of communication between these two people who come from totally different realities and cannot understand each other.
Well, unfortunately, our time has come to an end. I think that your reference to Dickens is an interesting one. Certainly, he, as you say, Dickens was popular in his own time, in the same way in which, obviously, Camilleri, who has, I think, sold 2.5 million copies of his book, obviously, an incredible amount, and in translated into several languages. One wonders whether he will stand the test of time, as Dickens has done, but I would like to think that he will. What do you think? Will he?
Everybody hopes so, but, you know, our nephews will tell us, probably.
Exactly. Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Saverio Tomaiuolo, for coming to talk to us today about the difficulties, the challenges of translating Andrea Camilleri's books. Thank you so much.
Thanks to you.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.